All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. And our first guest on the show today is Dr. Stephen Zunis. He is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he chairs the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He writes for the Huffington Post and a lot of other places like that. The latest one there is Bipartisan Assault on Middle East Peace. Welcome back to the show, Stephen. How are you doing?
Be with you.
Better question, where are you doing?
Well, actually, right now, I am in Benicassim, Spain. Right, I'm overlooking the Mediterranean as we speak. I have a four-week teaching gig at the Jaume I University in Castellón, working with a wonderful international group of graduate students in their master's program in peace, conflict, and development. And decided to come down where there's Wi-Fi service and talk to you, which happens to be in this cafe of a historic old hotel where Ernest Hemingway and Dos Santos and a lot of other literati and other folks used to hang out years ago. I don't think they came from the Wi-Fi like I do, but it's still a very nice place.
Well, right on. I think that's really cool. It makes a nice little bit of scenery for our discussion here if, you know, people have imaginations, which I'm pretty sure they do, probably. Even if they've never been there, to remember what it looks like. And then, of course, there's always Google Images, too, if they're that curious. All right, anyway, so, HuffingtonPost.com, Bipartisan Assault on Middle East Peace. This is about the Israeli occupation of Capitol Hill. Both parties on Capitol Hill, something like that.
This is ridiculous. You know, public opinion in the United States has been evolving over the years, especially with younger people. More and more Americans are having a more balanced view, you know, seeing their rights and wrongs on both sides, you know, generally supporting Israel's right to exist, but saying, hey, this kind of occupation and colonization and repression is uncool, you know, no matter who you are. And a lot of liberals used to have this real idealistic view of Israel, you know, the Paul Newman and Exodus kind of cowboy and Indian thing have now taken a more balanced perspective. I mean, there's been a lot of movement in public opinion, but my God, Congress just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. This resolution passed by a vote of 411-2. 411-2 with 8 abstentions. It was Ron Paul, as you might expect, voted no. John Dingell, who's a Democrat from Michigan, probably the longest-serving Democratic member. You know, he's in a district that has a large Arab American constituency in suburban Detroit. He voted no, but everybody else seemed to support this thing, and it just is dangerous on a whole number of levels, including increasing United States. Military ties to Israel. You know, the arms control community is basically saying, you know, there's already too many arms in the Middle East, but you have, you know, 98% of the Congress saying, oh, there's not enough arms. We need to provide even more. And you have, it reiterates U.S. support for Israel's security, which is not unreasonable in and of itself, except that it specifies for the first time ever Israel as a Jewish state. In other words, the first time in history, to my knowledge, that the United States has ever placed itself on record of having an obligation to defend the religious or cultural or ethnic identity to a particular country. Israel can call itself whatever it wants, but to say that the United States has the obligation to defend it as a Jewish state is a pretty dangerous and, as far as I know, unprecedented state.
Yeah, well, you know, there used to be all kinds of politics, and maybe there still is all kinds of politics of racial supremacy here at home, but yeah, outright pledging ourselves to racial supremacy in some other, or ethnic, as you say, whatever, however you want to classify it, religious supremacy in a foreign country, as far as I know, that's a new one, too. And by the way, it's not all Jews live in Israel. Hey,
Yeah, you know, the 20% of the population is not Jewish, Israel itself, not to mention the millions of Palestinians, which are under de facto occupation, either directly in terms of Israeli military control or in these various cantons where the Palestinian Authority is the local authority, but they're surrounded by Israel, and Israel can tell them where they can come and go and all that kind of stuff. They're effectively still under occupation. And in fact, the resolution also related to this says the United States should press Arab countries to recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Again, this is unprecedented. The Camp David Accords with Egypt, which have held firm for 34 years at this point, there's no demand that Egypt recognize Israel as a Jewish state. The Jordanian-Israeli peace agreement, which has been in effect for something like 18 years, no demands that Jordan recognize Israel as a Jewish state. But now the United States has raised the bar, saying that peace with Israel is not enough. You have to specifically recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Again, this is unprecedented. Think of all the U.S. treaties we've had with other countries. When we had these arms control agreements with the Soviet Union, we didn't recognize them as a communist state or anything like that. You make agreements with governments. You don't identify them for any kind of particular identity. That's up to them. It's not up to a foreign country to validate a particular kind of identity. This is ridiculous. And again, this is unprecedented.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just kind of identify the problem too, which is that all of their neighbors are willing to recognize Israel at least within 67 borders, including the Hamas government of the Gaza Strip is willing to recognize Israel. And so they just have to keep upping the ante and moving the goalposts further back, because otherwise there'd be peace, and we can't have that.
Exactly. You know, every time the Arabs agree to a new concession, Israel and Congress then ups the ante to say you have to add this other thing too. And the fact is, you know, the Arab countries and the Palestine Authority have made clear, we will recognize Israel, make peace if they withdraw from the occupied territories. In fact, even if they don't, you know, withdraw from all of them, but have some mutual and reciprocal minor border adjustments. I mean, the Palestinians are compromising all sorts of things. But then to up the ante and say, no, not only have to you do that, you have to recognize them as a Jewish state, knowing full well that no Arab country is going to be willing to do that. Basically, Congress is saying, we don't want peace. We want a continued state of war. We want a continued insecurity where American arms manufacturers can continue to sell and provide things to Israel. Indeed, this the other piece of this piece of legislation. It calls for increasing military aid above the already record $3.1 billion, you know, by an additional $600 million, and at a time where they're cutting back, not just on foreign aid programs to help the poor. After all, Israel, which is only 1/1000th of the world's population, gets about a third of U.S. foreign aid, more than all of Africa combined, but, you know, it's not only cutting off foreign aid for programs that actually help poor people that might need oral rehydration, AIDS prevention, sustainable development, food aid, that kind of thing. But of course, cut back to programs here at home. We're saying we should increase aid to Israel even further over the record amount of money that's already under Obama's budget.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, too, and this is, well, it's not shocking other than it's shocking in how tone-deaf these people are to their own tyranny, and that's the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee that's behind this thing and the congressmen that all went along, where they outright bemoan. I think only Rick Santorum was so crass during the Republican campaign there to outright publicly decry anything but the staunchest support for each and every one of our Middle East sock puppet dictators, even if that means, you know, somehow coercing Mubarak or Mubarak's army to massacre the people in Tahrir Square, I guess. We cannot have any kind of Arab Spring. They just outright bemoan it. They don't even give the slightest bit of lip service to people power and democracy over there in this thing, despite whatever Hillary Clinton likes to say on TV. This is America's real policy. All right, we'll be right back with Stephen Zunis right after this, y'all. All right, y'all, welcome back. It's Anti-War Radio. We're talking with Stephen Zunis. He's halfway around the world in Spain right now. Wrote this piece for the HuffingtonPost.com. Bipartisan Assault on Middle East peace. Now, I'm going to be as quiet as I can and let you talk more about this resolution. I guess where we left off was where they outright complain about the Arab Spring. They don't even pretend that America cares about democracy in the Middle East at all.
Yeah, this part really riled me, to be honest, because you know the opening clauses of the resolution basically bemoan that it is destabilizing traditional U.S. allies, that Iran is taking advantage of it. You know, here you have this this movement for freedom, you know, which is clearly incomplete. Clearly does have complications. There's a lot of struggle to come. But, you know, my God, this is one of the most exciting things that's happened that part of the world, you know, since forever. You know, and instead of celebrating this popular movement for freedom, they basically put it in the light of, oh, no, this might conceivably, theoretically have harm to alleged U.S. and Israeli strategic interests.
Well, of course, a big part of the reason why America spends so much money and effort backing the dictatorships of the Middle East is so they'll leave Israel alone. Mubarak is the perfect example of that. So they're right to fear that, hey, if things change and the people of the Middle East actually have a say in the policy of their government, maybe it won't be what we want. You know, we talk with Adam Morrow from Interpress Service on the show from time to time, who's reporting from Cairo about how, well, there was more pressure before and less now, but still, it's a major issue about whether they're going to open up the Rafah border. Nobody's talking about, you know, abrogating the entire peace treaty with Israel or anything like that, but when it comes to doing what Netanyahu wants, you know, at the checkpoint there, maybe not so much. So, yeah, things might change, but still, so what are you going to do? Put Omar Suleiman, the torture monster, in charge instead to keep everybody down and to keep them from having their way when it's their Egypt, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
What are we, the British or something?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it shows, you know, for, in a sense, the colonialist mindset of the of Congress, you know, that they are... they're unwilling to celebrate a struggle for human freedom and say that bemoan the fall of regimes long considered to be stabilizing forces and blaming Iran for seeking to exploit the political transition and undermine governments traditionally aligned with the United States. I assume that's in reference to Bahrain, where the freedom struggle there was brutally suppressed, you know, by the U.S.-backed dictatorship and by the Saudis, which invaded the country to suppress this pro-democracy movement. And even though the Bahraini's own internal investigation found that the Iranians were not behind the uprising, that was a genuinely broad-based pro-democracy movement. Here we have Congress weighing in that by this 411-2 majority, you know, implying that this and these other things are some kind of Iranian conspiracy to threaten Israel and the United States.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, of all of the government that I'm the enemy of, right, you got to start at the top, right? So I want the presidency stripped of its power first, and to have, you know, the imperial presidency, the presidency that can start a war on his own without even the congressional rubber stamp, as it's been since Korea, you know, that's the kind of thing that has to end if we're ever to have any kind of limited republic as opposed to a world empire. And yet, man, I'm kind of glad that we have the calm patience and wisdom of George W. Bush and Barack Obama keeping these decisions out of the hands of the guys that run the Senate. I mean, they're the kinds of people who can't get elected to the presidency. That's why they're still in the Senate. And thank goodness for that. They're completely off their rocker, man.
I mean, it's amazing. Just a few days ago, the Senate Appropriations Committee passed this resolution that basically called in the United States to no longer recognize, like, you know, 95% of Palestinian refugees as refugees. And the Obama administration said, hey, look, you know, historically, you know, the children and grandchildren of refugees are considered refugees. If they're not allowed to return to their own country, they are by definition refugees. But the bipartisan majority of Congress is saying, no, we have the right to say that the only true Palestinian refugees are the people who were the folks who originally left Palestine in 1948, of which there are only about 30,000 left because they're like 80-something years old now. You know?
Oh, I thought you were going to say that originally left Palestine 2,000 years ago. And
yeah, just, right. Oh. Yeah, but it's a great way to absolve the Palestinian refugee problem, saying all the original people who left, so they, you know, who in fact were forced out, but you know, that those who are ethnically cleansed, that, but yeah, once those guys die off, hey, there's no more Palestinian refugee problem. The Israelis no longer have any obligation, et cetera, along these lines. You know, so very, very convenient, you know, for Congress to unilaterally make this declaration. And the Obama administration has actually said, hey, this could be real complicated, this could cause some real problems, this could get a lot of people upset at us, and it doesn't really make sense, this is something that should be in the peace process, et cetera. And Congress is saying, no, even the Democrats are saying, to hell with you, Obama, we're going to support this Republican resolution and push it through anyway. So as critical as I am of President Obama and some of the decisions he's made, at least in this case, he's being a little bit more rational than both Democrats and Republicans in Congress.
Yeah, well, basically what's happening is he's smart enough, that's his calm leadership, is he's trying to give a little bit of a puppet show of anything like a pretended peace process here, to just throw a bone to, not even a bone, a pretend bone to somebody. And then the Israel lobby, and especially in the Republican Party, they take that as, oh, look at him taking the side of the Palestinians or whatever, and freak out and attack him as though he's betraying the cause, when all he's saying is, I want to do the exact same policy, only, hey, let's, you know, hold a conference every once in a while, and, you know, like Condoleezza Rice, pretend like we mean to get somewhere, just to kind of, you know, keep the Fuhrer tamp down a little bit. That's all.
Exactly. And the fact that, again, this is yet another area where the United States is totally out of sync for the rest of the world, and which reminds me, there's also a provision in this resolution, passed 411-2, that the United States should veto any so-called one-sided resolutions in the U.N. Security Council directed at Israel, even those that are reasonably critical of Israel's ongoing violations of international humanitarian law and previous U.N. Security Council resolutions, or possible future crimes against humanity and other war crimes. And you know, it's just amazing. I mean, even under Reagan and Carter and Nixon and Ford, you know, you know, and Bush Senior, you know, the U.S. was willing to say, hey, if Israel really goes off the wall and does something totally crazy, we'll at least pass a resolution critical. Now, we won't put sanctions, we won't put any teeth in it, it'll be essentially meaningless, but at least we'll say something. And now Congress is saying, you can't even say something. You have to veto it anyway, even if it's meaningless and toothless.
Yep. And Obama has only one choice, and that is pander worse and more, and that could cause another war. Anyway, that's the subject for the next one, I guess. Thanks very much for your time. It's great to talk to you as always, Stephen.
Enjoy it a lot. Thanks a lot.
Stephen Zunis, everybody. HuffingtonPost.com.